Welcome to the Monitor Daily Podcast. It's Wednesday, April 28th. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Scott.
And I'm Noelle Swan.
Father, aerospace engineer, and astronaut Michael Hopkins returns to Earth Saturday after 6 months aboard the International Space Station. And Colonel Hopkins can now add space gardener to his resume. While orbiting our planet at about 17,100 miles per hour, the American astronaut has grown two varieties of lettuce, Amara mustard and extra dwarf pak choi. The space station crew recently finished savoring the last of the pak choi as a warm side dish, marinated in soy sauce and garlic. Apart from giving astronauts a delicious break from food in a tube, NASA is learning how to grow pick-and-eat crops to feed crews on multi-year Mars missions. NASA has worked with 230 U.S. middle and high school science classes to select seeds that will thrive in a microgravity garden. Previous space station crews have grown radishes, soybeans, and wheat, which grew 10% taller. But NASA has another motivation, which echoes why so many people stuck at home on spaceship Earth grew veggies during the pandemic. Gardening feeds the soul. It nourishes a sense of hope. And there's something inherently therapeutic about caring for another life form. Mr. Hopkins said recently, even though astronauts can't run to the supermarket for fresh produce during a two-year mission to Mars, they could float into a module that has the same smell and feel of the produce section. And that, he said, will put a smile on any astronaut's face. Now, today's stories. Our first story. Our reporter finds there's little optimism in the future of women's rights or democracy in Afghanistan with the planned U.S. withdrawal from the South Asian nation.
As the United States prepares to remove its troops from Afghanistan, ending America's longest war, the Islamist Taliban are signaling uncompromising positions that appear to barely recognize the dramatic social and political changes in Afghanistan since the U.S. ousted the self-proclaimed Islamic Emirate 2 decades ago. It raises questions about the danger to Afghanistan posed by a Taliban leadership returning after years in exile, equipped with thinking that analysts say is often still calcified from a previous era. The Taliban's Voice of Jihad website is among those raising red flags about the Taliban's post-U.S. withdrawal intentions. An article posted Wednesday, for example, titled "Feminism as a Colonial Tool," suggests that feminism for decades justified invasion, subjugation, and bullying of Muslims. Also emblematic of the Taliban's unwavering stance is its insistence on the term Islamic Emirate throughout its negotiations with the U.S. The Taliban wants everything, even this Islamic Emirate, which could be changed to anything and doesn't carry any value. But just to prove their point, they're even sticking to that, says Rahmatullah Amiri, a Kabul-based analyst. If I'm not willing to change even the name, which is superficial, why would I be willing to change the content? This story was reported by Scott Peterson in London for The Monitor.
What does it mean to be bipartisan? So far, the Biden administration defines it as including Republican ideas in a bill, even if there are no GOP votes for it. But our reporter finds GOP lawmakers expect a more sincere partnership.
On the campaign trail, Joe Biden promised to be a president for all Americans, reaching across the aisle and tempering the progressive left. But in his first 3 months in office, President Biden has been pushing through an ambitious agenda that expands the reach of government in many areas, so far without any Republican votes. The White House is calling its approach bipartisan because it incorporates some Republican ideas and has garnered approval from some Republican voters, mayors, and governors. They point to polls showing the general popularity of the $1.9 trillion COVID-19 relief bill, which gave most Americans stimulus checks and infused state and local governments with funding. This redefinition of bipartisanship has cheered progressives, who say GOP obstructionism has held Congress hostage for too long. But it has frustrated Republican senators with a track record of bipartisan cooperation. It discourages a lot of us because we want to work with them, says Senator Rob Portman of Ohio, one of 10 GOP senators courted by the White House. He'll be listening as President Biden addresses Congress tonight and watching closely in the weeks to come. Words matter, he says, but action matters more. This story was reported by Krista Case Bryant in Washington for The Monitor.
Trust is the foundation of a partnership. Our columnist observes renewed U.S. leadership on climate issues is warily welcomed. But are America's commitments reliable, or will they vanish with the next election?
100 days after his inauguration, President Joe Biden is keeping his election promise to restore America's international leadership. But the rest of the world, friend and foe alike, is still not convinced that attitude will live on beyond his term in office. The Republican Party is still dominated by Donald Trump, who pulled Washington back from its international engagement during his presidency. Midterm congressional elections in 18 months and another presidential election 2 years later mean Mr. Trump's influence could hold sway once more. Mr. Biden is steaming ahead on the international front, hosting a summit last week to reinvigorate the Paris Agreement on climate change, and heading in June to the Group of Seven summit in Britain, and to a NATO meeting in Brussels. But he has yet to lay firm foundations for this activism, and they will require bipartisan support at home. Only if he succeeds in another of his inaugural priorities, healing domestic divisions and bringing his country together, will U.S. allies be reassured that America is back for good. This story was reported by Ned Temko in London for The Monitor.
For Kurdish women, tradition, culture, and family members often limit their opportunities in life. But this story is about women whose path to gender equality and dignity goes through the battlefields of Syria.
Women in the Syrian Kurdish Women's Protection Units, or YPJ, fought on the front line against the Islamic State, serving as snipers, tacticians, and battlefield commanders, and leading both men and women into battle. The women were fighting for their lives against ISIS, true, but also for their own equality. As Gail Zimak Lemon, author of The Daughters of Kobani, explains, YPJ soldiers tested themselves day in and day out against one of the most brutal fighting forces the world has ever seen. They couldn't separate the political piece from the fighting. Without the military victories, the political experiment could not take hold. They believed, as one fighter put it, that if we can lead in battle, we can govern in peace, and no one can question that. And they were right. As Ms. Lemon says, to watch your family members protect your people from the existential threat of the Islamic State, it really makes you question all the limits that have been placed on women's lives, because you can see for yourself how much they're capable of. This story was reported by Anna Mulrein Grube for The Monitor.
In this week's cosmic roundup of progress, we find high and low tech efforts to fix environmental damage in small Indian communities, Kazakhstan, and outer space. You can find the full roundup by Lindsay McGinnis in today's issue at csmonitor.com/daily. Now, commentary from The Monitor's editorial board on India. Now the epicenter of the COVID-19 pandemic, India has received extraordinary offers of aid from other countries. Even arch rival Pakistan made a goodwill gesture to help relieve its neighbor's unprecedented health crisis. Some aid is being given for political or strategic reasons. Yet, look closer and you'll see another motive at work: an appreciation for India's past generosity. Since the coronavirus crisis began last year, India has assisted more than 100 vulnerable countries with supplies and training. Indian officials cite a spiritual basis for such aid in a Hindu term, dan, translated as charity without motive. Its open heart has opened the hearts of others. "It's time for the world to extend aid and support to India," tweeted Volkan Bozkır, president of the United Nations General Assembly. No wonder so many countries now want to assist India. It has graciously accepted much of the aid, with little regard for whether it comes from friend or foe. Such giving is more than a type of mutual aid society. When done out of gratitude, it also points to a greater good available to all, with no expectation of reciprocity or credit. That's our news. You can find the full-length versions of these stories in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. Thanks for joining us. Come back tomorrow. We're working on a story about American gun owners who are open to more regulations. While it may sometimes seem we're subject to countless influences, today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor shares that the knowledge that there is only one real influence, the divine influence, enables us to prove the truth of what we are as children of God. You can find the column in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. Finally, a grace note of gratitude to our staff, including today's audio production team: Jeff Turton, Ibrahim Onofeko, and Jingnong Peng.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor. Copyright 2021.